You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
To admit, you know, when we were both asked the question, I assumed he would say what everybody has always said, which is, hey, of course, you know, because to say you won't respect the results of the election, that is a direct threat to our democracy. The peaceful transfer of power is one of the things that makes America, America. It is not a joke. And look, some people are sore losers. And, you know, we just got to keep going.
June 11th, 2020. That was Hillary. Oh, I knew you recognized the voice. That was Hillary Clinton a week after one of the debates where the question had been raised to her and Donald Trump. Will you accept if you lose? Will you accept a loss? And Trump said, well, I don't know. I don't know. Let's see what the results are. If I win, yeah, I'll accept them. If not, we'll see. That'll be a surprise. And she used that, she thought, as great ammunition. He will not accept the results of the election if he loses. And there are sore losers. There are sore losers everywhere. Well, of course, the election came down. And Hillary lost. But she was so gracious and a great loser and said, that's okay, and don't bother investigating if anything was wrong, because it was absolutely fair. I will accept the verdict of the will of the people. No, she didn't. There began the Russian collusion and everything else they could pile on with. Democrats are already crying. If we lose against Trump again, it's because he's doing tricks, manipulation. It's because Republicans are suppressing the vote, fighting mail-in ballots. That's not the real issue. Fighting mail-in ballots, they're not against mail-in ballots. They're in mass mail-in ballots. And when they can't be verified and checked in time, and they're going out to addresses of people that might have moved or died or now live in another state, and now they get a chance to vote in two states. Because we will not allow voter ID. Because, again, that's voter suppression. We're going to get into that in more detail, and it was all sparked because Joe Biden appearing on Comedy Central, perfect spot for Joe Biden to appear. And he was asked, what if Trump won't leave office? What are you going to do? We'll get into that over the next 2 hours. There are more pressing, serious issues. The Congressional Committee, of course, in the House, working on the police reform bill. Some parts of it might be good, some might be worthy, but of course, they will try to weaponize it again. The brother of George Floyd testifying yesterday, you could not hear his testimony in yesterday's program because it was underway while we were on the air, but I want you to hear from him today. But there was another witness who also testified. I'm willing to bet you did not see nor hear this testimony. We'll have that for you. And Sleepless in Seattle, remember the movie? Need to make a new one. Lawless in Seattle. We'll get to that story. Dr. Rick Layman joining us. Several COVID stories to discuss. Some fake numbers being passed around. What about COVID patients on ventilators in comas taking forever to come out of that coma? We'll get into those questions with Dr. Rick Layman. And the continued efforts to destroy history. NASCAR deciding it's going to strike the Confederate flag from all cars. And also saying we're not going to demand drivers and their crew pits stand for the Pledge of Allegiance national anthem. Additional repercussions on that. And, of course, Bubba Wallace is the only black driver in NASCAR, and his car is going to be labeled Black Lives Matter. That's still being sorted out. And in Buffalo, you saw the video, I'm sure, of Buffalo police knocking down an elderly man, falling, hitting his head, and beginning to bleed. It's bad-looking video. But there's new information and new video about the guy and what he was doing and what he had been doing before police made that shove. He happened to stumble as he was falling back. But still, officers were charged. Others resigned because of it. I'm going to tell you about that new information. And we have the video for you. I'll tell you where to see that. We've got a lot coming up in the next 2 hours. Let your family and friends know we're on the air. Spread the word. Because the next 2 hours, we've got a lot of material for you. A lot of material. So I encourage you to settle down, get ready, lock and load. Ready on the right.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Tom Wellington and his staff at Wellington Environmental have certainly been busy over the last several weeks, making sure businesses and hospitals and nursing homes are clear of COVID-19. As you begin to reopen, try to restart your business, I would encourage you to contact Wellington Environmental. I'll give you a phone number in a moment. They can come in, assess the situation at a very reasonable cost, and make sure your facility is clear of COVID-19. And even after you're open, if something comes up and you're not sure, you want to contact Wellington Environmental. And not only for COVID-19, for any other threat, mold, any toxic situation. Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. In business for 30 years, you know they're doing it right. Be well with Wellington Environmental. This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
I started singing bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Them old boys were drinking whiskey and rye and singing, this'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I'm tired. I'm tired of pain. Pain you feel when you watch something like that. When you watch your big brother, who you looked up to for your whole life, die begging for his mom. I'm here to ask you to make it stop. Stop the pain. Stop us from being tired. George called for help and he was ignored. Please listen to the call I'm making to you now.
That is Felonese Floyd, the brother of George Floyd, testifying yesterday at a House hearing on racial profiling and police brutality, tearfully urging lawmakers to stop the pain. And he pointed out how his brother had called for his mother. His mother has been passed for some time, but he was calling to her in his final moments, as we saw on the video, as he's being held down by a Minneapolis police officer with his knee into the back of his neck, and George Floyd repeatedly saying, "I can't breathe." The House Judiciary Committee hearing, of course, following the riots and protests, the peaceful protests, but also the riots that came up after Floyd's death. There is a growing push to reform police departments, defund police departments, even abolish police departments. The hearing purpose specifically to examine the crisis of racial profiling, police brutality, and lost trust between police departments. There is no doubt there are areas that we can have improvement. You have to acknowledge that. You would be foolish not to acknowledge that police departments in some cases need reform, maybe complete overhaul in some departments. But the other issue is, in this rush to move forward like this, we're going to indict some good officers. We're going to tear down some good police departments. And you know who's going to end up being hurt the most? The minority communities that rely on police to protect them from the gangs roving through their neighborhood. We have heard repeatedly from Black Lives Matter activists that cops are the reason black lives are being taken. No. In most cases, in fact, every stat for the last few years shows more whites are killed by police than blacks. And of course, when you start looking at black-on-black crime, more die from that kind of crime than at the hands of police. That's not to justify any time that police mishandle and go over what they should based on their rules, policies, and everything else. There's no justification. There's no justification for killing George Floyd on basically trying to pass a $20 counterfeit bill, as he was accused of doing when police showed up. I want you again to hear some additional comments from George Floyd's brother who testified yesterday.
If his death ends up changing the world for the better, and I think it will, then he died as he lived. It is on you to make sure his death is not in vain. I didn't get the chance to say goodbye to Perry while he was here. I was robbed of that. But I know he's looking down at us now. Perry, look up at what you did. Big brother, you changed the world. Thank you for everything, for taking care of us when on earth, for taking care of us now. I hope you found mama and you can rest in peace.
The testimony yesterday from Philonese Floyd, George Floyd's brother. You have to accept, and I do not want to hear anyone make any remarks or condemnation of George Floyd's brother and his comments. That is a loss of his brother. You know, you could have a brother, a sister, a father, a mother, guilty of a most heinous crime, but you probably still love them, but not what they did. In this case, George Floyd was killed by a police officer, or at least contributing to the death. We have to see how it stacks out on the final analysis and everything else, by putting his knee into his neck, excessive force for an extended period of time, 8 minutes, 46 seconds. Now, no other officers around didn't do anything to stop it. So I'm all for making an inquiry and looking at it and reform where it's needed. But the next step is, when they start talking about defunding police, one of those others testifying yesterday, former Secret Service agent Dan Bongino, said, you start defunding police, you're going to end up with chaos and destruction. And we're already seeing that, and I'll point to it specifically in Seattle in a moment. Congressman Jim Jordan, the top Republican on that same House Judiciary Committee, listening to the testimony of George Floyd's brother. And Jordan said in his opening statement, American people, quote, understand it is time for a real discussion, real debate, real solutions about police treatment of African Americans. And he also added, Americans also understand that peaceful protest honors George Floyd's memory, and it helps those debates and solutions actually happen. And then he added, there's certainly a big difference between peaceful protest and killing police officers. And he added, you know what else the American people fully understand? They know that the vast, vast majority of law enforcement officers are responsible, hardworking, heroic first responders. In our neighborhoods, every day, every night, every shift they work, they put their lives on the line to keep those communities safe. And it is pure insanity to defund the police. And the fact that my Democrat colleagues will not speak out against this crazy policy is just frightening. Congressman Jordan referring directly to L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, both who say they're going to support slashing police budgets, reinvesting in communities. Garcetti said he wants to cut $150 million from the city police department, redistribute the money to black communities and communities of color. Well, I'd have to ask, why have you not done something like that prior? I'm not talking about taking out the police budget. Why have you not made that commitment to those communities before now? You're doing it now because you're pandering. You're pandering for black votes is what you're doing. Pastor Daryl Scott, senior pastor for the New Spirit Revival Center, a member of President Trump's executive transmission team, said, "I don't recommend throwing out the baby with the bathwater by labeling all police officers as bad cops because of bad actions of a rogue settlement, a segment, I should say." Pastor Scott, again among those speaking out and saying, defunding departments have made conditions much worse, and he points to his home city of Cleveland, Ohio. Pastor Scott, a black man, says 16 years ago, Cleveland laid off 285 officers, department budget slashed by almost a third. He said, what we have now in Cleveland, response time dramatically longer, murder rates climbing, property crimes at record levels, aggravated robberies higher, drug sale, use, abuse higher, drug and alcohol-related motor vehicle accidents, the highest they've ever seen. He says Cleveland has gone from a relatively safe city per capita to an unbelievably unsafe city. And that brings us to Seattle. The movie Sleepless in Seattle. Now you might relabel Lawless in Seattle. There's a zone around a police district headquarters that the police, or actually the politicians, decided to close in order the police just leave that office closed. And all around that area, something like a 6-block area plus in that area of Seattle, protesters say now is a cop-free zone. We don't want any cops in this area. And police are being told, stay away, just don't even go in there, unless there's a call to 911 for help. And, of course, if there's a call to 911 for help, and you don't get there fast enough, well, we're going to criticize you for that as well. One Seattle official said, leaders in this anti-cop zone are, quote, starting to extort money from local businesses within the border for protection. Yesterday, I raised on Facebook, on my Larry Connors USA Facebook, what would happen if police departments were abandoned and dropped. One listener writing in, well, then we'd have to rely on the Crips and Bloods for protection and would be extorted. And this is exactly what is being reported today out of Seattle. He said this area, which includes numerous bars, restaurants, businesses, private residents, they're begging for help. They're not being allowed into their homes without ID by some of these folks now in control of the anti-cop zone. No one at these checkpoints has legal authority to demand identification from anyone. Not from anyone. But police are not allowed in there, and now you've got groups coming in saying, let's take it over. The Seattle Police Union Chief says city leaders have, quote, lost all political will to enforce the rule of law. He said it's absolutely unreasonable activism and we're pulling our hair out because we are true public safety professionals that took an oath of office. We are holding our elected leaders responsible for this travesty on the overall amazing Seattle community that are law-abiding citizens yearning for police officers' public safety services. The protests continue in what they call the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. It's been effectively abandoned by police after the officers, or rather the department, closed down the East Precinct on Monday. And they closed it on the orders from politicians. Now put yourself in that neighborhood. You've got a business in there. You can't count on police to come help you. What you do have are some thugs at the door saying, "Hey, I know you don't want this place to burn up overnight by accident. Pony up some money." Oh, they're not going to call it extortion. They're saying we're trying to fund a protection group for you. It's the same thing. You know it is. It's clear extortion. President Trump tweeting out last night, domestic terrorists have taken over in that area of Seattle. And radical left Dems are allowing them to happen, to have it and just run with it. There was one person you probably did not hear from that testimony in front of the Judiciary Committee yesterday. I wonder why they didn't run her story. I've got her testimony coming up after this break. I encourage you to please stand by and hear what she had to say.
Red Fitness Lounge in Clayton sponsors this segment. Red Fitness Lounge, redefining exercise, changing how you think and look at fitness, one client at a time. I'll see you at Red Fitness Lounge. Get details at redfitnesslounge.com. Redfitnesslounge.com.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
We were talking earlier about how in Seattle, police are being told to stay out of an area, just let them have it. We're going to see how that shakes down. And you watch other Democrat-controlled cities as they allow police, or I should say order police, stay away. Unless you're called for 911, just don't do anything. Yield to those already there. I told you one of my listeners on Facebook yesterday posted a comment. I want to repeat it. David posting yesterday, without the police, we'll be paying the Crips and the Bloods for protection. He's right. And as I told you, some Seattle businesses are already reporting in that area. We're being extorted. We're being told you don't want your place to burn down or something go wrong. You need to come up with some money. And, of course, the testimony yesterday in the Judiciary Committee was trying to put a target on police officers, even if they're good. That's really what the Democrats are doing. Make no mistake about it. Even good police officers, when they start defunding departments, slashing their budgets, it's going to hurt the good police officers as well. And the testimony from George Floyd's brother was powerful, most powerful. But there was another piece of testimony that came from a woman by the name of Angela Underwood Jacobs. Her brother, 53-year-old Patrick Underwood, a federal law enforcement officer, killed in Oakland, California, while protecting the U.S. courthouse during not a protest, a peaceful protest, but obviously a violent protest for George Floyd. Her brother shot down. Listen to her testimony.
I want to extend my sympathies and condolences to George Floyd's family. Mr. Floyd's murder was just not cruel and reprehensible, but criminal. The officers involved should be brought to justice and held accountable for their actions or as well as their inaction. I wish that same justice for my brother, Patrick. who served with distinction and honor as a federal officer for the Department of Homeland Security, until he was murdered anonymously by blind violence on the steps of the federal courthouse in Oakland, California. As he took his last breath on the cold, hard cement after being shot multiple times, he died. Fear, hatred, ignorance, and blind violence snatched the life of my brother Patrick from all of us. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. preached, "Always avoid violence. If you succumb to the temptation of using violence in your struggle, unborn generations will be recipients of a long and desolate night of bitterness. And your chief legacy to the future will be an endless reign of meaningless chaos."
Did you see any of the mainstream media running her testimony, telling her brother's story, a law officer killed in the midst of some of the violence? No, I didn't. There's a lot of confusion lately over some COVID numbers and what's happening and what's not going to happen. I'm going to have Dr. Rick Layman join us in the next segment. We'll break that story down.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm local tax attorney Lance Drury, and I've represented hundreds of individuals and small businesses in disputes with the IRS. So if you've been contacted for past due tax debt or haven't filed taxes in a while, contact me, Lance Drury. And because each client's case is unique, we'll meet face-to-face and go over your tax situation in detail. Together, we'll develop a strategy to resolve your tax issues. I'm experienced, I know your rights, and I'll give you honest answers. Under my 8-point plan, my firm will file the necessary forms needed to resolve your issue with the IRS, and you won't have to worry about talking to their agents. I'll negotiate on your behalf to get you the lowest settlement allowed by law. At the Lance Drury Law Firm, we want to make sure that you're satisfied with the outcome. So call me now, tax resolution attorney Lance Drury, 314-238-7360, or go to LanceDrurylaw.com.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Dr. Rick Layman is with the U.S. Center for Sports Medicine, and he's been following a lot of these stories on COVID-19. And I want to get some stories past him, get his response on the Dr. Layman, glad to have you back on board, sir.
Well, thank you, Larry. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, as you know, I've got several items I want to put in front of you. Let's begin with the World Health Organization, because I think we just continue to see they think they know what they're going to do. They don't know what they do. Masks are not good, not going to do you any good. Then you should have them, and then maybe you don't need them. Now you need them. And then we had the other day the World Health Organization, one of the infectious disease epidemiologists said, I need to walk back a statement that asymptomatic transmission is very rare. And she did. So what did she do wrong to begin with, and what is she trying to clarify?
Well, first of all, they came out and they said that asymptomatic transmission was rare, meaning that if somebody had it and didn't know they had it, they would not be able to give it to somebody else, i.e. you had an adolescent that had coronavirus, they were asymptomatic, they felt fine, they were never sick. They went home and gave it to grandpa, who then became very sick because he was at risk. And so they came out and said that doesn't happen. Well, the studies show that, and it depends on which study you read, but up to 60% of the people that have the coronavirus, and this was a Johns Hopkins study, came out and said that those people are asymptomatic and they're the main carriers, and there's been three or four studies showing that those are the people that you have to be careful about. So you have two groups of people. You have a nursing home where you have highly congested area and a lot of people are getting it, And then you have people that don't know they have it, and they're giving it to family members who may be at risk. So they came out and they said that didn't happen, which is contrary to every study that we've seen so far. And Johns Hopkins has been a leader in the COVID virus. And so basically, you know, they were just wrong.
I just want to clarify, because it kind of gets hard for some of the audience to follow. First of all, asymptomatic means exactly what?
So asymptomatic means you have the problem, but you don't know you have the problem. You have no symptoms. You're not sick.
So you don't know you can spread it. And now they said that doesn't happen. And then so the bottom line is, yes, it can.
Well, absolutely. And some people feel that's the major mode of transference of the virus. A lot of people feel that that's why the virus has been harder to contain, is because a lot of people who don't know they have it are what's called shedding and giving it to other people.
All right, so you mentioned nursing homes, and that was another story I want to get into, because there are several nursing homes that are pretty amazed at what they're getting. In Saugus, I guess it's Saugus or Saugus, Massachusetts, a rehab nursing center, they saw that a new Medicare website reported that facility had 794 cases of COVID-19, the second highest in the country, and they have 281 cases also among the staff. The administrator says, oh, my God, where are they getting those numbers? It doesn't make any sense. And then you got a nursing home in Oklahoma that has only 90-plus beds, and they're told they had 300-plus dead or having the virus. In other words, 339 dying of COVID-19. What is going on with these numbers? What are we to believe?
Well, so you have two things going on. You have ridiculous reporting, but nursing homes are bad for two reasons. One is everybody's sort of jammed together, you know, again, high density. And the average age, I can tell you from every study of people in nursing homes, about 82.4 years old. So you got some younger people, you got some older people, but those are the people that are at risk. And so those people are going to be sick. Now, if you have 90 beds and you have 300 people dying, obviously you've got miscalculation and bad numbers. But the bottom line is nursing homes are bad places, and this whole idea of Governor Cuomo saying send people to nursing homes was, you know, a death sentence. So in my opinion, that is an at-risk place, and those people should be on self-quarantine, and I think they have to greatly reduce the numbers of people in each nursing home so that they can social distance.
And at the same time, we need accurate numbers. I mean, the numbers being reported to CDC or however they're going in, they say, I guess we didn't understand the instructions of how we're supposed to classify them.
Absolutely, and I think that's been a problem the whole time. I think the reporting has been absolute. So if somebody dies of a heart attack, and they're elderly, they say they make the cause of death COVID. And we talked about this because they get significant amounts of money to put COVID on the death certificate.
And, of course, if they put them on a ventilator at a hospital, they get additional money, right?
That's correct, $39,000. So, again, you know, they're incentivized to make the diagnosis, and they're incentivized to move people, you know, into that type of care. And again, you hit it on the head. I think the reporting has been off.
Well, since we're talking about those on ventilators, there's another report that came out. This is from a journal, Neurology, and I know you're familiar with this as well, that they are pointing out that COVID-19 patients who spent long periods on ventilators now taking days or weeks to wake up from a medically induced coma, and they don't know why.
That's correct, and part of the reason, there's two reasons. One of the reason is that the COVID hits the pulmonary system or the lungs heavily, so people are not getting appropriate oxygenation of their brain. And that's why a lot of people say that you should take an aspirin every day. So if you do get the disease, you're going to have less, you're getting blood clots in your lungs, and you're going to have less blood clots in your lungs. So people feel that that's a very viable way to go. So they don't think they're getting adequate oxygenation in their brains. And so that's why it's taken 4 or 5 days for every one day they're on a ventilator to wake up. The other problem is they are getting small clots in the vessels in the brain, and they're very small. They're not enough to cause strokes, and that's causing some issues with them waking up. But it is taking a while to wake up, again, about 4 or 5 days for every day on the vent. And some of these people are on vents for months. And number two, we're seeing some issues of PTSD, you know, post-traumatic stress syndrome or depression afterwards.
Yeah, I wanted to get into that subject. And, of course, that's referring to those on a ventilator or in a medically induced coma, regardless of an accident or COVID-19, correct?
Correct. That's absolutely correct. And anybody on a ventilator doesn't just wake up the day the ventilator stops. So everybody has some lag. This just seems to be excessive.
And among those with a PTSD, as we're calling it, reference ventilators, it's how does that manifest it for someone who's, again, aside from COVID, been on a ventilator for a period of time, they're coming off. Someone told me, and they apparently know firsthand, that for every day you're on a ventilator, it's going to take you 4 or 5 days before you can regain what muscle, strength, memory, whatever you had. So 20 days, going to multiply that by 4 or 5 before you're back to full active.
That's correct. And, you know, you have a lot of issues. You have weakness. You've been laying in bed the whole time. You haven't been using your muscles at all. You're in a medically induced coma. The machine is breathing for you. So you're totally atrophic. You've generally lost weight because you can't keep up with the nutrition. So, yes, you're right. It takes 4 or 5 days to kind of come back. Now, what we're seeing is these people at about 3 and 4 months are still clinically depressed, and they need to go on antipsychotic medicines or medicines, Zoloft, some of these antidepressants. And based on that, we're seeing a high incidence of post-traumatic stress syndrome and depression subsequent to coming off the ventilator. But again, if you think about it, if you've been on a ventilator for a month, you're going to be depressed. And I don't think that's not just COVID.
And that also, you talk about the depression, is in the sense that you've come to grips with your mortality or your life has changed or a combination of, or what?
Well, I think you're coming back into a world that you don't remember when you left. Everything has changed. Number one, people are quarantined. Your family's not allowed to come see you, as you know, because of transmission. So you're totally isolated. It's not like if you had another disease where your family could be around you. And then once you get off the ventilator, your family still can't come in and see you, so no one can see you. Maybe they can look at you through some window or call you. And so I think that's adding to the depression. And the last thing is just what you said. You're looking at your mortality, and you're saying to yourself, A, you know, am I going to make it through this? And B, I'm totally alone.
There's another thing that has come up, reference COVID. They have come up and decided that a particular blood type might actually reduce your possibility. You're 9 to 18% less likely to test positive if you have type O blood.
That's correct. And so people with A and B, A is the big one. You know, that's the worst one to have if you get coronavirus or COVID.
In what way?
So that's a genetic predisposition. No one really understands that. People are studying that, trying to look at that issue to see if there's some way that's going to help cure the disease. But there is no question that if you're African-American, number one, if you have pre-existing pulmonary disease or your blood type O, all those things portend poorly for you.
Now, type O is going to be better, and are there divisions of type O blood that would say you're not as protected?
Well, no. You're better to be O positive than O negative, but you know, if you have blood type O, you're better than being A positive or A negative. So blood type O is the best. If you're A positive, it's better than being, O positive, it's better than being O negative.
All right.
But again, you got about a 20% kicker if you're blood type O versus A or B or AB.
All right. Well, Doctor, I appreciate it. I hope we didn't lose some of the audience on that, but as always, you put it in perspective for us. Thank you.
My pleasure. Take care.
You bet, Dr. Rick Lehman. And again, type O might provide some protection from coronavirus. We'll sum it up with that. We'll take a break, and when we come back, New York has some guidelines regarding COVID if you're going to have sex. Please stand by.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at LarryConnorsUSA.
Street, pretty woman, I've got and I like to meet pretty woman.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Well, of course, we're still in the process of trying to start our economy again, get everyone going forward, restarting businesses, getting folks back at work. And if you've been in some of the restaurants that have actually opened for seating now, you often find the staff wearing the mask. You may or may not. It's up to you. They don't demand that you wear it, but the staff at this time is being demanded. And you might find at the bar that you can only seat so many at a bar, or there are now plexiglass partitions between every 2 to 4 chairs. All right, that's the way we're going to have to do things for a while. You should note this, that word just coming out that the Gateway Arch National Park will begin reopening June 17. June 17. And the Los Angeles Mayor Garcetti says, if you were protesting for the last few days in Los Angeles, you need to self-quarantine for 14 days. Even if you're wearing a mask, and maybe you're wearing the mask to avoid getting or spreading the virus, or you were trying to conceal your identity. But either way, if you were out there in the midst of it, touching things, things getting into your eye, and your hand to your eye, your mouth, whatever, later on, he said, if you were protesting, please go get a test, a free test at an open testing center. Which, by the way, in some areas, they have reported that the riots destroyed some free testing centers. We are probably still going to have the COVID-19 around for a while. We understand that. And Dr. Fauci coming out and saying these protests that we've seen, he said it's a perfect setup for the spread of the virus in the sense of creating some blips which might turn into a new surge. For at this point, the U.S. is above 2 million confirmed infections, 110,000 deaths. And, of course, you were told to lock down, don't go out, don't do anything, stay inside by many Democrat city mayors and governors. Oh, well, you want to protest? That's okay. Go ahead and go do that. You can go out for that. But now they're saying lock down again. Why? Well, because Trump and the campaign are planning some new rallies. I think one is coming up later this month in Tulsa. And they're trying to say, you shouldn't be going to those rallies. And, of course, the Republican convention might have to be moved from where it's scheduled because that city and governor don't want any more than 150 at the rally. I mean, at the convention. That's not going to work either, is it? And now we get a new concern. No, you can't go out. You're going to have to lock down again. That's what they've set this up. It's a game plan. It's a game plan at this point. If you're going to protest and riot, okay. If you're going to go to the Republican convention, no. If you're going to go out and just have a good time, no, you probably shouldn't. And then comes New York State. Now, this is critical because, I don't know, folks have been locked down, maybe away from their loved one or maybe with their loved one. In some cases, they might be, I'm done, I'm gone. But just in case, now they're getting to come together again, New York State issuing guidelines for having sex during the pandemic, and they are very explicit in the detail. The state advice, during this extended public health emergency, people will and should have sex. Oh, really? Consider using harm reduction strategies to reduce the risk to yourself, your partners, and our community. And they issued several guidelines. In addition to the usual, wearing masks, we're all washing hands, sex only with a regular partner, or with someone you share a residence, or someone that has frequent coronavirus tests, or that you do the same if you're meeting partners online. And then take note of this. In the event of threesomes or larger sex gatherings, you need to limit the guest list. And also other tips. Pick larger, more open, well-ventilated spaces. Avoid kissing. Do not touch your eyes, nose, or mouth with unwashed hands. If casual sex does occur, the New York State guidelines say you need to avoid kissing, rimming. I'll let you figure that one out. I'm not going to get into all of this for you. Be creative with sexual positions and physical barriers like walls that allow sexual contact while preventing close face-to-face contact. The guidelines do not specify what you're supposed to do with a wall. It doesn't. And it also talks about, I told you specific. I told you specific. So when I say this, don't blame me. This is a state guideline in New York. Folks should masturbate together rather than having intercourse and using physical distance and a mask as well. Oh, by the way, in case you hadn't figured this out, if you're feeling sick, you should avoid sex. So there you have it. Certain ways you should and should not have sex, and probably want to and should. State recognizes that. But you got to use certain things, and again, if you're feeling sick. How many times have we heard one spouse tell the other, I got a headache? It's the same old thing, I guess. Oh, well, now you're prepared, I guess. Next hour, Biden says Trump will probably try to steal the election. And what would happen if Trump refuses to leave the White House? You're going to enjoy that next segment. Coming up next hour.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors, USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.